Blog Talk Radio.
Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healing expert, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love, author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com, and Healing Through Love seminar leader. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter how old you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are showing that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Deborah Wingfield, author and trainer in family violence treatment and prevention. Dr. Wingfield developed and taught a domestic violence counselor training curriculum at the University of Southern Colorado, now Colorado State University, Pueblo. As a practicing counselor from 1975 to 2002, with delinquent youth, families with child abuse and neglect issues, adults, and children from all dysfunctional family types, and domestic violence victims, child witness victims, and offenders, Dr. Wingfield designed and implemented programs that address these issues, and these are issues that so many people don't really want to pay attention to. In her research, she used a transactional analysis model exploring adult perceptions of family of origin dynamics related to alcoholic, abusive, and chronic illness families. She holds a master's degree in counseling and organizational psychology and doctorate in counselor education. Even if you are divorced and living separately from your children's other parent, do you sometimes feel controlled? Do you feel like your ex is still trying to control you through manipulation or through your children? When you think about your ex as a co-parent, do the words control freak describe that person? I am delighted to be speaking with Dr. Deborah Wingfield today, who's been devoting her time, energy, research, and expertise to this important aspect of relationship life that most people turn a blind eye to, even the very place designed to protect our rights, the court system. And this interview was triggered by a very sad event that happened on Monday in West Palm Beach, Florida, about 20 minutes away from where I live, where a mother apparently committed a suicide murder of her two children. And I knew that Dr. Deborah could speak to this issue and enlighten a lot of us to maybe help prevent this from happening to someone we know. So, Dr. Wingfield, I'm so happy to welcome you.
Well, thank you, Erica, and it's my honor to be here and to talk to your listeners. This is certainly a tragedy, and a tragedy that happens more often than many of us want to acknowledge. And one of the things that I would like to share with your audience is that very seldom do we see a mother doing a murder-suicide, whereas more often in cases like this, we see the father doing the murder-suicide. And sometimes it even goes to the father murdering the children, murdering the ex-wife, and then murdering himself. So when these situations happen, I always have to ask, what could the court have done to de-escalate the stress and tension and adversity that happens in these coercive controlling relationships? And how could the courts actually be supportive to make these situations work well for the children when parents are divorcing? And
I would like
a real conundrum.
Dr. Deborah, I would like to add not only the courts, but family and friends and people that are observing this. You know, what can some of them do? So before we go any further, I think it would be really valuable for you to explain at least two terms, maybe more than that. What is coercive control, and what is a control freak or a controlling parent?
Okay. Well, a coercive control really has to do with a pattern of behavior where the controlling individual is attempting to keep the person that they're controlling from having various types of freedom. And those freedoms can be economic freedom. Those freedoms can be freedom from being emotionally and psychologically abused. Those freedoms can be freedom to practice their own religious or spiritual belief system without being abused. There are just a number of coercive control tactics that we see being used. And in my book, I actually talk about 15 of those, 12 of those that can happen within the relationship prior to even going into family court. And then there are three that we see happen additionally when there's a separation and a divorce, and how the courts become complicit, how the attorneys become complicit, and how the court-ordered professionals who are involved in the case can become complicit in re-victimizing and re-abusing the victim in the relationship. So,
and one of the reasons that this happens, I think, is that many of them are not even aware of what is going on. Maybe you can explain a little bit about the type of behavior that the controlling control freak parent is exhibiting, that maybe the court system doesn't even recognize the degree of control.
Okay, let me give you some examples of some of those kinds of things. One of the big things that we see in the court system is financial or economic abuse. And generally, there's a pattern of financial or economic abuse that's been going on in the relationship, and then it continues into the court system. So the abuser will actually work towards impoverishing the victim in the relationship. And let me clarify here a minute. We find primarily in these cases that the abuser is male and the victim is female, although sometimes that's reversed. So when I'm speaking about the abuser, I'm speaking about the husband and the victim or victim survivor being the wife, because that's generally the way that it works. And I want your listeners to know that I don't see that as 100% of the time, but I do see that in the greatest percentage of time that it works that way. So what the man does in the relationship is he economically abuses by keeping money from her, not allowing her to get the education she may need to be able to be self-supporting, not providing money for anything except essentials, and then having her report back to him every penny that she's spending. And he usually has more power in the marketplace, so he has a stronger economic base, and then he'll turn that around in the court system and use that to constantly be filing motions, and if she does something wrong, filing a contempt motion instead of trying to get it worked out, continually pushing his attorney to do more and more motions and hearings until she runs out of money. And they've even found through research, excuse me, that they've identified a special form of this economic abuse in the court system, and they call that paper abuse. And I have seen mothers come into the court system and into the courtroom with boxes of paperwork that there's so much paperwork that has been generated in these kinds of cases that they actually need a cart to drag it into the courtroom because they can't carry it all into the courtroom. It is.
And you made a statement that I caught in there. You said that if the woman makes a mistake, but she may not even make a mistake, he may purposely misinterpret something and claim that she made a mistake, even if she does it perfectly right.
That's correct. And one of the things that we find is that he'll use emotional abuse by lying about things in the courtroom. And we have a serious problem with judges who believe the men in the courtroom even when they're lying. And they tend to disbelieve the women even when they're telling the truth. And what it does is it tips the balance towards the man. So we have a definite bias there. And very often he'll get either primary custody or sole custody, and he'll get sole decision-making when these are two people who have come together with these children as part of their family, and now all of a sudden he's taking away any kind of power she has to decide what's best for the children, to be the primary caregiver for the children. And there are cases that have gone so far as to completely eliminate the mother from the children's lives.
And I can see, just from my small experience in this, that if a spouse, the man, is really being emotionally abusive and lying, she could get very hysterical because she's hearing the lies. She's hearing all these lies, and, you know, she thinks that this is crazy and she acts crazy, so the courts and people may see her as being crazy, and she isn't. She's just upset, and rightfully so.
Right. And what we're seeing is a type of trauma response from these mothers that is not a post-traumatic stress response, but an actual trauma to the situation response. And when they respond that way, judges are horrified because they don't know what to do with that kind of emotional response. So therefore, they look at the father and say, well, he's calm and collected and stable, and so we're going to give him primary custody of the children. When in fact, what she's doing is she's saying, I'm trying to protect my children. It's like the mama bear. And we all know if we walk into the woods in the spring and the mama bear comes out and she sees us close to her cubs, she's going to attack to protect her cubs. But when we have a mother who is trying to protect her children from being abused, from being put in a situation where harm will come to them, then she's seen as hysterical and unstable, and therefore the father should have the children. So we really have to be very careful about what's being interpreted in the courts. And I could go on and on and on about this. What I'd like to do is go back and talk about the trauma issues that can lead to a mother feeling like she has no hope, that her children are going to be forever taken away from her and completely brainwashed against her. And in doing that, she will lose her children. And that level of despair could lead to the kind of situation that happened earlier this week in West Palm Beach, where a mother said, I don't see any other options, and I don't want him ruining the children, so I'm going to eliminate the children and eliminate myself. And we really don't want to see it come to that. What we would really prefer to see is a mother in that situation having people she can reach out to who can truly be helpful to her.
Well, they have to first understand the enormity of the situation and what she's really experiencing, because when I heard neighbors speak about this particular situation, they said she was at a party and she was talking like she finally is getting a divorce. She sounded wonderful. So people would have to have known what's really going on underneath, because a lot of people make a good front in public.
That's very true. And what we need is we need a lot more trained professionals who are working in the court system to help identify these situations and to be able to put the right kinds of support in there. And what I've heard over and over from mothers who have reached out to victim services programs in their communities, that the victim advocates don't know how to help these mothers, and so they refer them on to someone else. And pretty soon these mothers say, there's nobody who can help me. I'm out here. I feel like I'm all by myself. And when you're feeling in that deep, dark hole of, I don't know what else there is, that's when the thoughts of suicide come up. That's when the thoughts of, I don't want him ruining our children. If I'm not here to protect them, then I don't want them to be completely brainwashed by him. And I can't even begin to start to imagine where this all came from with this mom. There may be some things that come out in the next few weeks as they're doing the investigation. But
tell us more. Not every case ends up so severe, thank God. So maybe tell us more about the average cases, and just that they go through emotional torture, but maybe not murder and suicide.
Right. And what I can tell you is the cases that I work with, I'm not going to say they're average cases because every case is different, but the protective mothers that I'm working with and occasionally protective fathers have this sense over time that no matter what I do, he's going to disrupt it, he's going to interfere with it, he's going to make it look like I'm the bad person and he's wonderful. And what we're working on, and through my book, what I talk about is how to start setting boundaries with these control freak co-parents so that he doesn't continue to gain ammunition to go back to court and use that in court. I also talk about how they can do their healing process and they can help their children build the inner strength to be able to stand up to the abuser. So we have a lot of work that we really do over time to empower these mothers to not get hooked into his game of trying to push her buttons every single time they have any kind of interaction. And it takes time because, first of all, we have to help the protective mother debrief the trauma that she's gone through. And if she's going to a therapist, she needs to have not only a trauma-informed therapist, but a trauma-informed therapist who also understands coercive control tactics and the patterns that come out of those specific coercive control tactics.
So how do you help these people? What do you do for mothers or for the victim of this kind of situation?
Well, initially, I listen to their story. And most of the time, the first or second time that I actually talk with them, I'm listening for pretty much 90 minutes while they're just unloading their story. And while they're unloading their story, what I'm doing is I'm affirming for them that, first of all, they're not alone, that I'm hearing it, I understand it, and that's very important. They need to know that someone understands the pain that they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we begin to work on whatever are the most current issues that they're trying to resolve. And as we work on those, then we continue to work and use some of the transformational journaling tools that are in the book, Eyes Wide Open, Help with Control Freak Co-Parents, to help them write out what the situation is, how that's impacting them, what they want to do differently to set those healthy boundaries. And then that reinforcement of setting those boundaries and setting those boundaries and seeing that over time it begins to shift the dynamic of that co-parent relationship. It's not an overnight process by any means. It's a process that takes months. And I know with some of the women that I've worked with, it's taken a year or more to get to a point where they can actually respond to the other parent without getting caught up in all the emotional piece. Because the other co-parent is doing nothing to change his behavior. All he's doing is continuing to try to push her buttons. And we use actually a behavioral technique that we use even with children, which is, if you continue to give the same message over and over and over again, and the child doesn't get the response that they want, eventually you'll extinguish that behavior. And so we work with that with the protective parent.
You're saying something important here, that it is a couple and it is an interaction. You know, and there's something about enabling, not that the person is causing that behavior, but they're not doing maybe what's necessary to put some stops to the behavior or to limit those behaviors.
Right. And it's important to limit those behaviors. That doesn't mean that the mother is then denied her feelings. It's just that she finds either an advocate like myself, and I work with these mothers in an advocacy role, not in a therapy role, but in an advocacy role, So they find an advocate who they can talk to who will validate their feelings, and then that frees them up to just focus on the boundaries that they're setting and to just say what they need to say in a very factual way. And over time, the abuser does not hear the reinforcement that he's looking for, which is that she comes back at him with spewing all of her anger and her upset at him. All he hears is, oh, I got the message, and we'll be meeting for the exchange of our children on this date at this time in this location.
Mm-hmm.
And he has no message that he's upset her. And over time, she begins to see how that, for him, is a game that he's trying to play to continue to manipulate her. And when it's not working anymore.
Yeah. Also, in the court system, if she has that support and that advocacy, then when she goes into the courtroom, she can be composed and not appear to be crazy and upset and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And so how can people get in touch with you? I don't know, your website, your book. Just tell a little bit about how they can get in touch with you and what you have to offer.
Okay. My book, Eyes Wide Open, Help with Control Freak Co-Parents, is available on Amazon.com in the Kindle bookstore. And in the book, it provides information on how to get a hold of me. My website, houseofpeacepubs.com, that's houseofpeacepubs.com. They can click on the products icon there on my book, on my webpage, and it will take them right to the books. And they can also contact me through questions at houseofpeacepubs.com. And I also have a presence on Facebook, and I meet and talk to a lot of protective mothers on Facebook and have no problem doing that. So if someone is on Facebook and they want to reach out to me and do a friend request, just let me know that you have a question about working with a control freak co-parent, and I will be sure to friend you.
Oh, that's really important. So in closing, is there some advice you could give to both the parent, that is the mother usually, who is running into this problem, being controlled and coerced and upset and frustrated, and for friends and relatives who see this happening?
Okay. Well, for mothers and protective fathers, I would encourage you to reach out and find a support system. It may be an online support system. You may be able to find someone locally. If you're looking at finding a therapist, look for a trauma-informed therapist who also has training in coercive control tactics and is able to help you stop being controlled by the coercive controller. If you're a friend or family member, I would recommend that you also pick up the book, Eyes Wide Open, Help with Control Freak Co-Parents, because you can learn a lot about the different patterns. And you can help your family member or your friend begin to see what kinds of things are going on there. And it takes baby steps. It's not something that just you can drop this on someone and they'll get it overnight. You have to go slowly because there's a lot of denial. There's been a lot of brainwashing by the abuser, and it may take some time to get through to the mother that this is what's going on. And I guess in closing, if you're having someone who is talking about being emotionally abused, what tends to happen is that women who are being emotionally abused, economically abused, spiritually abused, their children are being used against them, all of those pieces, they'll lump underneath that one category of emotional abuse. And when you start helping them take it apart and see the different types of abuse that are going on, it helps them to realize that these patterns are happening in every area of their life. And by doing that, they're more likely to take action and to do something to protect themselves and to protect their children. The other thing that I would like to say, and my colleagues and I respond to this all the time, very often there's a question of why does she stay? And the real question to ask is, why does he feel like he has a right to abuse her? This is someone who he claims to love and care about and has the most intimate relationship with. And yet, we tend to put the responsibility on the woman rather than the man who's doing the abusing. So we want to shift our focus there. The second thing is that sometimes she knows it's more dangerous for her to leave than it is for her to stay. And unless she tells you that, you don't know that. So that's an important question to ask her. Would it be more dangerous if you left than if you stayed with him?
Right. And Most people just do not think of something like that. They just can't imagine it if they haven't been in it.
Right. So she knows what is the safest thing for her at that moment. Now, that could change, but she may need some help to be able to look at other options and to see that there's other potential in other places.
Well, Dr. Deborah, you are really doing a service that is so needed. So I'm so happy that I have been able to interview you today. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Dr. Erica, and I look forward to many more talks about coercive control and how we take responsibility to stop that in our society.
And one of the things I would like to end with is that the abuser, the one that's acting so horrible, would not be able to do that if he felt loved. So it goes way back to that person's upbringing and what's going on. So we need to create more love and more support for everyone.
That's so true. Thank you again, Dr. Erica.
And thank you. So I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond. And contact me at drericagoodstone.com.